Thank you very much. And I think that this comes at a very timely moment right after that talk, because what I'm trying to do is more think about this from a perspective of, all of you probably have interventions. All of you have thought about this in terms of the maternal child health aspects, but how can you actually do something either to measure the impact of a particular intervention, or whether that intervention within maybe a bigger context of a packet of interventions, and some of the things that you really have to address and overcome when you're trying to both implement and measure the impact of that implementation. And particularly when you come to something as complex as emergency obstetric and neonatal care, it's really, as I'm sure our earlier speaker knows, it's more about than about just putting on the garment. It has a lot to do with giving the fluids, giving the medication, making sure you have the transport. So how do you effectively either look at it all together or break it into the efficient parts? So PRONTO stands for Programa de Descarte Obstétrico Neonatal Tratamiento Óptimo y Oportuno. What we're going to do is, the list of names there are our collaborators, and we're lucky enough to have Dr. Onesmus Gatuno from the University of Nairobi. He's the PI of our Kenya trial, who's here with us today. So if afterwards you have any questions about what it's actually like to do this work, he will understand. So basically, let me tell you what PRONTO is. PRONTO, as in the title, it's a very low-tech, highly realistic emergency simulation training program with the goal of making teams respond more effectively and in a more timely manner to an obstetric or neonatal emergency. It has four main pillars. Our pillars are highly realistic simulation using a very cheap $20 low-tech birth simulator made out of a pair of recycled surgical scrub pants. We run teams, not individuals, through highly realistic simulations. We do a lot of work on team training and communication, breaking down hierarchies between doctors, nurses, midwives, and other health professionals that are required to act during an emergency. And it's all driven towards an end goal of system change. While we run through these simulations in situ, in the setting where they're actually occurring, teams encounter latent errors, things that are waiting to happen. The medication's not kept in the refrigerator. The ambulance tire has been flat for the past 6 months. The table is not appropriate for resuscitating a baby. How do we uncover those things and empower the team to actually make them decide, we can change this, we will change it with what we have? And then finally, underlying it all, we address the issue of kind and respectful care during delivery. Because they're highly realistic simulations, we uncover what that patient-provider interaction is, and in a very organic way, driven by the participants themselves, there's some new norms developed around how we should be caring for the women we're caring for. This program started in Mexico, really out of a specific need to address quality of care in hospitals, and that the existing training programs didn't really seem to have evidence for their impact. This is where the implementation trial comes in. Nor did they really address the complexities. Okay, so we're working initially in Mexico. We're now rolling out in Kenya, Guatemala, and we'll be piloting in some other countries next year. I think the most important way for you to actually see what it is we do, I think the best way to see what it is we do is to show a bit of a simulation. So this, I'm going to just show 1 minute of a training simulation, so you can see what actually happens. This is the case of a woman that has shoulder dystocia. The baby's delivered after a number of maneuvers. The baby's delivered needing resuscitation. Following the delivery of the placenta, there's a postpartum hemorrhage. And you can just, I'm just going to give you a brief little view of what happens. Again, this is from a training. So now they're having to resuscitate the baby and deal with the mother immediately. So that gives you sort of an idea, and then it goes on to where the blood comes out, and there ends up being a couple of liters of blood, and they're having to deal with how to deal with the mother, how to deal with the baby, and how to communicate with the mother at the same time. So when you have, you know, in our database now are hundreds of videos of simulations. So how do you take a training program that is that sort of complex and think about measuring the impact? Okay, think about all those things that we're trying to impact during the moments of an emergency, and how do you actually measure that? And here what we're trying to really acknowledge is that many training programs are pretty much siloed, and they try to measure use of one new technology, or they try to address resuscitating the baby, or they try to address giving active management in the third stage of labor, or they try to address, you know, they separate all of these different elements and focus on that to try to improve that. What we've done is sort of just gone with accepting the complexity of the situation. We try to integrate all of these silos together, and that, you know, integrated program leads to really integrated outcomes. And how do you design a trial that can actually measure some of that? So giving you a little bit of an idea of how we've done that, particularly what kind of design you can use and what guides the design of these sorts of trials. So in Mexico, we did a cluster randomized trial where we were able to have 24 hospitals and randomly select half of them to get our intervention, and the other half didn't get anything. That is obviously the most rigorous and ideal design to actually measure impact. But however, you really are depending upon a lot of buy-in from your local community, being willing to do that and willing to roll that out with you, and it can be very resource heavy. When we moved on into Kenya, we found there was actually a lot of resistance towards this whole idea of intervention and control. We could not identify clinics randomly as control. That was not appropriate in the cultural context. So there we've had to roll out a trial which is much more based on one department gets the training and a comparative department does not get the training. So they're not randomized. There's a comparable group that we're measuring follow-up. And then finally in Guatemala, where we're now doing a bigger scale-up trial, we're tasked with implementing the trial in an entire district. So there we have 40 clinics that they all need to be trained. And we can take advantage of that sort of task by thinking, well, we can't do it all at once. We're a small organization. It's going to take a lot of time. So what we can randomize is who gets the training first and who gets the training last, and do a stepped wedge type design in order to get some more rigorous outcomes, rather than just sort of saying, okay, you want the training, we'll just do it, and then we'll get less, if we think about it ahead of time, we'll get less stuck in how can we actually rigorously measure whether we've made any difference. And then ideally, our outcome is maternal death, but everyone who works in this knows that that's a really difficult outcome to measure. It requires a huge amount of sample size, and it's really difficult to power a study to that. So what we have ended up choosing in most of these studies is perinatal mortality, which has been our more sort of rigorous outcome. But as you can see, that those simulations really impact all sorts of other elements. To get at our maternal outcomes, we took the WHO's near-miss approach in hospitals, where they have this, they're trying to get almost dead women that actually survive a severe maternal complication, and associate it with particular practices that you might use to save that life. We've taken that and adapted it for primary care settings so that you can get an idea of what happens when a mother comes in and has a severe hemorrhage, and what do they do? Do those women get the IV they're advised to get? Do they get the uterotonics? So we have a new instrument that we're using now to try to get at some of these the maternal side of things, which we believe is where a huge part of our impact of our training comes in. And then that is that. And then when you always have these trials, you always have to build in these process indicators. And I know I'm focusing a lot on sort of quantitative things, and there is a whole qualitative world to this that I'm really not addressing now just for time reasons. But you really have to think through what kinds of things you can measure, what they're going to tell you, is it worth it or not, and what kinds of things you want to measure, and whether the things you can measure may or may not be good proxies for those. So we can all measure knowledge pre- and post-test, which we all do, but I personally don't have a lot of faith in that. I think it really appeases funders and people thinking you actually do something. But whether that relates into practice, I think there's a lot of skepticism about that. We can measure practices during normal delivery because we can go and do birth observation, which we do. We can see what happens during a normal birth before and after. Now, that gets at many of the things we encourage because our spectrum moves from a normal birth to emergency, but it really won't let us see what happens during emergency in places we've trained. And we can look at all of those videos that we did and try to see whether we're making any impact as the training goes on and as we go back in our second module. Are things better in the simulations, assuming that that reflects them accurately what their practice is? And we can measure the system changes that we are actually promoting. Did they fix the tire when we go back? Did they put in a bell to call out for an alarm? And those, we do believe, reflect actual changes that are moving towards healthier outcomes. But what we really want to measure are what happens to practice. What happens to the way those teams work together because they've been given this intensive training on how to deal as a team together during an emergency, and what that might reflect not only in obstetric and neonatal emergencies, but that might have a big impact on all sorts of other emergencies that are occurring in those hospitals as well, that aren't just where we're focusing around the time. The skills are really applicable in many settings. And this whole issue of advances in teamwork, I don't know any of you who know that the most recent, you know, American Heart Association's trainings are now integrating team training tools. How do you address an emergency situation as a team rather than as an individual? And I think this is something even more important in low-resource settings. So what I do want to tell you is sort of what we've actually found in trying to do this. I'm not going through the whole design and analysis, but just giving you the punchline so that it might trigger a few questions. In that, in our Mexico study where we have a one-year follow-up, we're showing a 44% decrease relative in perinatal mortality. Okay, so it looks like our intervention, which is bringing no new technology, no new resources. All we're doing is trying to make the people that are working where they work take advantage of what they have and who they have and put it together so that it works better. We also found, and this comes at measuring your outcomes, we were not, you know, Mexico has a horrible epidemic in cesarean section rates. Many of the public hospitals are well over 60% cesarean section rates. We happen to be measuring that. Now, we didn't directly think our intervention would impact that, but we're finding a true, clear, consistent decrease in cesarean section rates in hospitals where we're training. So that's sort of a secondary outcome that has, I think, a lot to do with increasing provider teams' confidence with managing a labor together and having this sort of more collegial attitude towards the work they're doing, and recognizing that whole, you know, that they're tasked with a really important job, bringing new lives into the world and treating those lives respectfully. So I'm going to finish it there. Hopefully you have a couple of interesting questions, because the idea is to recognize the complexity in this rather than let you know that I think this is the answer, this is how you do it, and see if you have any other ideas or thoughts. Thank you very much.
I think it's interesting that we had a talk on where there is no team and a talk on where there is a team. So this is a really nice counterpoint.
But I would just comment to that, every single place an emergency happens, there's a team. And that team might just be the midwife and the mother, or the husband and the mother, and a community health worker. And those people have to form a team to manage the emergency.
Always.
Is that a hand? You're not quite sure, please.
I just wanted to ask, you know, how long is your training course? And is it focused on key competencies, or is it all the key competencies? Part one. And the second one is did you also compare this, you know, the essence, as I could understand, was on the innovative training technology, simulation-based. So did you compare it with
Answer the second question first. So this trial rolled out over a year and a half, almost 2 years, just because it took that much time. And many of the control sites got training. Many of the intervention sites got additional training. So the standardized state training programs, and they were being run out heavily during these times and were controlling for that. There are different many training programs out there. So we didn't do a direct comparison, but we did not prevent them from getting any other training, and they did continue to get their training. And the training program is two modules. The first module is 2 days, 2 8-hour days, 6 simulations. The second module, we come back 3 months later and do a follow-up reinforcement, additional simulations, and additional themes.
In the back. If you have, I guess, turnover, people leaving the site and new employees entering, do you have something built into this program to retrain the staff?
That's a huge issue, and that's where we're at right now, because, you know, when you're a brand new program like this, no one's going to invest and say, okay, come back every year. And what we're showing now that our greatest impact is at 8 months, and then at 12 months, because there's that turnover at 12 months, suddenly we lose our impact. I think the other key thing about this in that Mexican data is we only trained about 30% of the providers that we were aiming to train. So our goal was to train, you know, at least 60% of the providers that deal with emergency obstetric and neonatal care. We trained 30. We did do some qualitative work a year out to find that actually there was this change of culture and diffusion into people that were not trained with many of the things that we were training. Yep.
Thank you for your presentation. I just have 2 questions. My first question is, did you train for accumulation? Maybe you addressed it, or will you ask? Because we do a lot of training on non-pneumatic short-term because of the high maternal mortality associated with hemorrhage among pregnant women. So I want to ask if you consider training traditional birth attendants.
Yeah, in Guatemala, we include traditional birth attendants in our training with the clinic. So they tend to be the woman that will bring the woman in, and they also, in these places where there's only one provider, one patient, maybe you have the TBA, how can you define the role of the TBA as a part, you know, and we're doing this in Kenya as well, and we're having a lot of difficulty defining what is that appropriate role, and I'm much more pushing for the role of a member of the emergency response team with key roles, versus this sort of wishy-washy birth accompaniment, which is important, but I think it gives them much more position of power to be part of a team with specific roles in an emergency.
Thank you. My second question, I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Because we also do what we call the emergency control team, which is a volunteer team that uses union drivers. They are not paid, such that when a woman is in labor or has an obstetric complication, her relatives will call who picked the woman from the community and took her to the facility. So what I'm asking is, because you highlighted the fact that in the transport, it's an additional factor that comes to play in this kind of emergency. So did you consider also doing that as an add-on, or do you have any specific data that shows improvement if you also provide transport?
Right. This is, you're getting right where we're at now. Because I think what we have developed is what I see as a really great training framework, sort of skeleton, and where local sites can say, we have these non-pneumatic shock garments, how do we get people to use them? We just bought a Doppler, how do we get them to use them? We have these ambulances, no one is calling at the right time. So the way to change behavior is to simulate it. So during our simulations in Guatemala, our provider, because it's primary care, will take out their cell phone and make the call. And we discuss, okay, what does that call need to include? You know, so that is where we're headed in this now. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Walker. Very exciting.